Welcome to UN Gender Focus, a brand new feature program we are launching this week from the United Nations in New York to better reflect the UN's work on gender issues around the world. I'm Veronica Reeves. In this week's program, more than a dozen UN agencies are taking a stand against discrimination, and a well-known celebrity speaks out against human trafficking. But first, an activist helping girls from the Yazidi minority of northern Iraq escape sexual enslavement by ISIL fighters worries that his people are being forgotten. Thousands of members of the Yazidi community were captured and sold into slavery last year by the terrorist group. At a briefing at UN headquarters on ISIL and its impact on women, the testimony from one young victim who had been sold into slavery and then raped was particularly gripping. Matthew Wells reports.
The briefing, organized by the UN Alliance of Civilizations, brought together victims, advocates, and individuals working in Syria and Iraq on behalf of women and girls enslaved by ISIL fighters. An estimated 550,000 Yazidis were forced to flee their homes around the Sinjar Mountains in August 2014 after the militant Islamists of ISIL attacked their ancestral area and captured thousands of women and girls. It became clear immediately that there was a plan to enslave and sexually abuse them, said Yazidi professor Kider Domle, who set up a rescue operation that's freed hundreds over the past year. He described one chilling story he'd been told by a girl who escaped.
He have a family and he's married two women, and he take a girl's 16 years as a for the sexual slavery. She say the family, they are very happy. They told me it is your punishment because you are Yazidi. We are still around 3,000 women and children in the hand of those barbarians.
He praised the work of many in the room to help care for the young victims of ISIL. But for the thousands of women and girls still trapped, much more needed to be done.
It's become over a year. We feel we become forgotten. There are a lot of things done till now by Yazidis, by Kurdish governments, to support especially the women who escaped. There are a lot of NGOs working, but nothing's been done how we can take those 3,000 women and children from ISIS.
The market price for Yazidi victims indicated just how severe the problem of sexual slavery had become in ISIL territory, he concluded.
The cheaper one, there are video, they recorded, it was $10 for a woman. We are in the 21st century, so woman, she's been sold by $10. Woman, she's been sold by $40, like Bazi, she's sitting here.
Bazi, not her real name, was one Yazidi survivor who was determined to recount her story of slavery and rape. Her face covered entirely by a veil in the UN conference room, she said it was essential for the truth to come out. Her words were translated.
I thank God that I was able to free myself and to run away. And it's been months that I'm back, but I don't feel that I'm back and out of their hands, because I have many, many other girls that are still captured by them. I know what's happening to them, so I don't feel myself that I'm freed yet.
Matthew Wells, United Nations.
Discrimination against lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex people violates more than their human rights. It also results in lost development and economic opportunities. That's according to 12 UN agencies that issued a joint statement Tuesday. The statement highlights the link between human rights abuses against LGBTI people and socioeconomic challenges. I spoke to Charles Radcliffe from the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. I asked him to explain the significance of the joint statement.
The joint statement is really, it's a reflection of work that is, and a commitment that exists now across the UN system. So, you know, we didn't start from scratch. Over the last few years, more and more UN agencies have begun to recognize that lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex people are marginalized. They're part of a community that is marginalized, that is excluded, that suffers stigma, violence, discrimination. And in their own programmatic work, they want to reach out to this community and try to develop strategies to address those problems. So the work is going on now across the system, and this statement kind of brings it together and creates a strong expression of commitment from all these agencies to tackle these problems. And I hope it also gives some guidance both to the member states and to UN teams on the ground in country at country level about the way in which this work needs to now unfold.
Tell us a little bit about the evolution of understanding of these issues. For a long time, they've been sort of put into the bucket of human rights issues. But tell us about the evolution, how there's growing awareness of how these issues affect broader work within the UN.
I mean, I think you're right that the consciousness began in the human rights community. These are, after all, human rights violations. Everybody, regardless of who they are or whom they love, have basic rights, the right to life, the right to be free from discrimination, the right to housing and work and so on. And these rights are being violated, and that is in breach of international human rights law. So that is the initial entry point, I think. But what this statement also recognizes is that there's a wider social, economic, and in fact a development impact of these violations, that, you know, when people get bullied at school and forced out of school and thrown out of home and become homeless and lose out on their education and become jobless and are in poverty and have mental health problems, that all of this weighs on communities, on society, and in the end on the economy. It's a, you know, personal tragedy for the individuals involved, but it's also a huge waste of human talent and creativity and potential for societies. And that I think comes through in this statement.
The American actress Mira Sorvino is using her position as a UN Goodwill Ambassador to publicize the truth behind the trafficking of women and men. Ms. Sorvino was at UN headquarters this week to discuss how criminal justice policies can better reflect the needs of women as part of the newly adopted global development agenda. Daniel Dickinson began by asking her about the scale of human trafficking worldwide.
The reality of human trafficking is that it's one of the most profitable criminal enterprises in the world, tied for second alongside arms dealing, topped only by drug dealing. But some people say now that the original estimate of $32 billion a year in profits is vastly underestimated and that the real profits are much, much higher indeed. There are more people living in slavery now than in any other time in recorded human history. 79% of its victims are women and girls, so it is definitely a form of an example of gender-based violence, although obviously men and boys are also inflicted with terrible, terrible violence and suffering under the yoke of slavery. Right now, only 1 in 100 victims will ever be discovered and rescued.
And you've met many of those women and girls. What was that like?
I have to say it's always such an emotional experience, sometimes almost too hard to bear, but you have to push through it for the sake of honoring what they have been through. You talk to children who've had their virginity sold by their mothers. You talk to people who were abused as labor trafficking victims in an elder care facility in California, who were forced to work for 6 months straight without any sleep, forced to made to eat garbage, threatened on penalty of their life and deportation if they ever tried to get away. The absolute denial of all forms of humanity as we know it, treated like objects, treated worse than pets or animals.
And to what extent do you see yourself as an advocate for those individuals?
I definitely see myself as an advocate, although, of course, the best advocate for a human trafficking survivor is a survivor, his or herself. But in the absence of that, or in the opportunities that I have to be at some of these very high-level, wonderful events, I try my very best to represent the truths that they've shared with me and also to recommend best policies, because advocacy and awareness is nothing if it doesn't foment change and real action on the ground.
And as an actress, how have you been able to bring this issue to a wider audience?
I think that being an actress has certainly helped with my public speaking abilities, although it's been a learning curve. But I can bring my knowledge and my research and my point of view and then combine it with a direct communication style that I think approaches people's hearts a little bit more than just being a dry delivery. I do have certain platforms where I could get on certain media that someone else might have a very difficult time doing. I was able to do a documentary in Cambodia called Every Day in Cambodia for the CNN Freedom Project, which I had the great honor of being a part of, and we reached a lot of people that way. A lot of people on television now understand the terrible damage that child sexual trafficking does to everyone involved and how terribly egregious it is to its victims.
You've been listening to Gender Focus from United Nations Radio in New York. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Reeves.